Welcome back to another chapter of To Honesty and Comeuppance, an Attack on Titan fanfiction written by yours truly, Tolstoy Ackerman. You can find this fanfiction by clicking on the link on my profile, which will take you to all of my works hosted on AO3, or by going to AO3 and searching for the title of this fic, or my pen name, Tolstoy Ackerman, two words. Standard disclaimer, I do not own Attack on Titan, I only own the original characters here within, and this is entirely non-for-profit. Thanks for coming back for another chapter. Without further ado, let's get into Chapter 34. Chapter 34, Runners. Normally, Himmel was thrilled to get a chance to spar with Levi, but as he strode outside with everyone in tow, she felt sick. This was different from all the other times. The entire intention was to show the kids how two killers moved, to show them the definition of ruthlessness, to show them what the death of a friend looked like. And when it was all over, she would be spilling her deepest secret to them all. It was essential that the team see her die. They could see what conviction looked like, they could learn how she came back, and it would hopefully harden them for when they lost one of their teammates. So everyone stood in the shade of the barn as Himmel practiced unsheathing her blades with a blunt edge facing the enemy. It would slow her movements by a fraction of a second, but that was fine. Levi stood 2 meters away with his arms crossed. His expression was distinctly displeased, as though he smelled something foul. "Best of three?" Himmel said. "No, we go until one of us is incapacitated," he then said to everyone. "Place your bets." "He's humanity's strongest soldier." "Yeah, but I saw her kill some thugs in the blink of an eye. She lost against him when I saw them spar last time. I think she might have killed more people than he has, though." As they gossiped, Himmel mused over Levi's choice. Considering that this match was already fixed, it was strange that he hadn't gone with the usual 3 matches. He had chosen for them to get as many killing blows in as possible until he landed a truly fatal one on her. He was trying to maximize the brutality they'd witness. They stood there, staring at one another, for a few long moments, not moving. Levi had both of his blades out and pointed down at the ground, making it impossible to tell what his first move would be. Himmel's hands weren't even on the hilts. And then they moved. They lunged head-on at each other, and Levi swung both of his blades to cut her clean in two at the middle, but Himmel leapt, swinging her body up into the air to be perpendicular to his face, fisting his hair in her left hand as she grabbed her sword with her free right hand and withdrew it. They went crashing to the ground, Himmel with the blunt edge of her blade to his throat. His eyes were thrown wide, mouth open in a gasp as the air had been thrown out of his lungs, and she leaned over him with adrenaline and excitement tingling in her. She said softly, "Captain, did you forget just how good I am with these swords?" "Don't call me Captain," he spat, even as she saw the spark of desire in his eyes. She let go of his hair and let him stand up. "It always sounds condescending when you say it." They backed up once more, and Himmel sheathed her sword. The group was speechless, unable to believe that she had delivered a killing blow to humanity's strongest soldier in less than a second. "That's one for Mel. Someone keep score," Levi said. This time, Himmel moved first. She lunged at him and swept up to kick him in the balls, but he stepped back, to the side, and lobbed a devastating right hook for her jaw. She jerked her head so sharply that her neck popped in alarm, but she wrapped her fingers around his forearm, and with a grunt, twirled into his arms, back to his chest, and threw him over her shoulder. Of course, the nimble bastard rolled to his feet instantly, and with a growl, he took out a sword and lunged at her. He intended to cut her diagonally, from the left shoulder to the right hip, and Himmel laughed as the adrenaline surged. She clapped her hands around the blade, and used his split second of surprise to draw closer and sweep his legs out from under him. She ducked down to pull her dagger out of her boots and pounce on him to finish the job, but he rolled out of the way, and her knees smashed into the unforgiving earth. Now he rolled back towards her and socked her once, twice, thrice in the gut and jaw, and finally he got his sword and swept it across her neck. It seared her vivacity into her, even as it robbed her of her blood, and she grinned up at him. The wound was shallow, but the red rubies he'd adorned her with served as a reminder of his victory. She slid the dagger back into her boot and took his outstretched hand to get to her feet. "One for Levi," she said. Her left hand still clasped in his, she brought her knee up to his crotch and then drove an elbow into his gut before he could catch his breath. She followed him to the ground, straddling his hips, and pressed his own blade against his neck as he panted and his arms shook with the effort of keeping her from separating his head from his body. "Is that how you want it?" he hissed. "You know I like it quick and dirty," she said, in a voice low enough only he could hear. He dragged the tip of his tongue across his top lip, and his eyes slipped shut for the briefest of moments. Himmel was utterly mesmerized, and suddenly very aware of his manhood against her core, separated only by their trousers, and in the lightning strike of want, her grip on his blade slackened. Then he threw his eyes open, wrapped his hand over hers on the hilt of the blade, and threw her off him entirely. Taken completely by surprise, she lost her hold on the sword and went tumbling. He was on his feet with both swords, intent on carving her up like a titan's reaching fingers, and she didn't have the time to stand. In a split second of instinct, she yanked a sheath free and held it up, blocking his downward swings. She trembled as he towered over her, his dark eyes aglow with the same fiery combination of excitement and bloodlust that she felt. It was incredible how they could forget the entire world when they were like this, she mused, as she pretended to buckle under his strength, forcing him to step closer to finish the downward strike that would drive the swords into her lungs and kill her. The tips of the blades were driving into her breasts, the sheath compressing her chest, and he was now close enough that she could bring a leg between his legs and send him flying over her head with his blades. She rolled onto her feet, ripped her sword out of the sheath in her hand, and lobbed the sheath like a spear at him as he picked himself back up, but he batted it away with a swift swing of the sword. They ran at each other, a sword in their right hands, and they met with a terrible clash of metal on metal. No sooner had their blades kissed than they were withdrawing, and Himmel went in for an upswing, but at the last second she changed the angle of the blade so that instead of meeting the cutting edge of his, it met the broadside and snapped all but the bottom 20 centimeters off. Unfazed, he adjusted. Instead of driving it down, he drove it straight forwards and into her gut. "Oh," Himmel said, collapsing against him. "Ugh, don't bleed on me," he said, and pushed her away with a hand. She stumbled, and her brain was telling her that this was an injury that demanded attention, but she pressed a hand to her stomach for a moment, feeling the rip through muscle and into something else important. Everyone was screaming for them to stop, and Eren made to run to her, but Hanji held him back. "Think you nicked my intestines or something," she said. "That makes it 2-2, he said. "I can't believe you wasted a perfectly good Titan blade only to lose." "Fuck you," she said. He dashed at her with incredible speed and chucked the base of the broken sword at her. She crouched down, and her gut screamed in protest, but she muzzled the pain and threw her arms up in a cross to absorb the vicious kick he'd aimed for her chin. Before he could draw back his foot, she grabbed his ankle and yanked on it hard enough to bring him down to the ground, and she struck him in the solar plexus with an unforgiving fist as she crawled atop him. Her strength was waning as she bled more and more and her organs shut down, but she wanted the final victory no matter the cost. Her fingers found his throat, and as he panted and struggled to remain conscious, he forced his hands between her arms and tried to pry them apart. Himmel grunted and writhed against him, refusing to yield. Levi must have been able to see the full determination in her eyes, because he gave up on this tactic and instead went for one 100 times more ruthless. He slid a hand between their chests and thrust a fist into her wound. Immediately, she went into shock as organs crashed together and delicate connections ruptured. The world became far and fuzzy, and vaguely she realized that she was now on her back, looking up at the blue sky that was growing paler and paler until it swallowed her, and she was floating in the calm waters where nothing hurt and everything was fine. "Mel, Hanji's bringing you back. Don't go berserk." The sun enveloped her and forged her anew from the heart outwards, and she took in a huge gulp of air as she threw her eyes open to see everyone crowded around her in abject disbelief. Hanji was on their knees, trembling fingers wrapped around the hilt of Himmel's dagger they had plunged into her heart. "Thanks," she said. "You can take it out now." When Hanji didn't move, Himmel wrapped her fingers around theirs and gently pulled the blade out. Hanji watched in fascination as the thin cut over her heart healed over instantly, and Himmel went to bounce onto her feet, but at least 3 sets of hands were on her as they panicked. Levi was the only one who had tired of this spectacle. "She's fine. Let her get up. She needs to stretch her legs afterwards." "Why?" Hanji wanted to know. Himmel picked herself up and wiped the sweat from her brow. Her hair was once again to her waist, and she was glad to have it back. Desperate to burn off the heat that was still charging through her, she bounced on the balls of her feet. "The first time brings me back ready," she said, "a surplus of energy." There were about 1,000 questions, all ones that Levi and Ervin had asked her before, and she answered them dutifully. It was easier to talk about each time, it seemed, though she felt that if not for the abundance of restless energy in her, she would have felt very ill. "Wait, so that's what you did on that supply run," Connie said, eyes wide. They all looked at him, waiting for an explanation. On one of the supply runs to Nedley, there was 12 Titans waiting outside the forest in that abandoned village. They came out of nowhere, and Alina and Eugen and Bertin, the Titans got them before they could switch to ODM gear. And Himmel, I don't remember what happened after that. I woke up and we were almost back to Utopia with their bodies. Suddenly heavy, Himmel stopped fidgeting. That was a day she would never forget. We lost those 3 so quickly. You assisted with 4, but one of them grabbed me, crushed my spine and fucked up my legs. I brought myself back, knocked you out before you could see, threw you in an abandoned house so you'd be safe, and handled it. I'm sorry. Instructor Shadus interrogated me when we got back and my concussion was gone. He wanted to know why Alina's shirt had a cut in the chest. I switched her shirt with mine, Himmel admitted. Normally I'm more careful, but I panicked. Then what Bertolt said in the forest. You knew it was true, Eden said. Besides Eden, only Levi, Hanji, and Ervin were privy to the contents of the conversation in the trees. Himmel repeated Bertolt's words, hating how they tasted. Before Annie transformed the second time, she learned that I could come back from the dead. She said I was a Rucker. So I asked Reiner and Bertolt what they knew about Ruckers, and Bertolt said they were powerful fighters who never tired and could come back from the dead at will, but their powers were rooted in Titans, and they were prone to violence and cruelty, and they were eradicated. It was a legend, but I understood the first sentence as truth. And the second, Mobley said. She had tried very hard not to think about it. The woman said we were all killed because people learned we were monsters. I don't know about the Titan thing, but the rest of it rings true. But what else other than Titan powers could allow you to regenerate like that? Armin said. Himmel picked up her sword and sheathed it. I showed you what I was supposed to show you, and I don't want to talk about this anymore. I'm going to finish making the cipher discs. You guys have fun sparring, and take it just as seriously as if Levi or I were coming at you. Before anyone could ask her anything else, she headed inside the house and brewed a kettle of tea with shaking fingers. Levi forgot how much he hated her ruthlessness when they were sparring because the challenge she presented him was novel. But she could rival him only because she had fought thousands of people before him, and she had seen nearly every move with every weapon possible, and she knew him better than she knew herself. Her strength was born of bloodshed. She understood that Levi wanted her to be more merciful, and she understood why, but she had no desire to spare the lives of those that stood in her way or threatened her people. It was impractical. That made her cold and prone to violence, but was it also cruel? And, if the legend was true, if it was her nature to be remorseless, could she ever hope to change it to appease him? She was standing over the kettle, wishing she could dive inside it and boil herself into steam when the front door slammed open. "Why didn't you tell me?" Eden demanded as he charged into the kitchen, not caring that his boots were tracking in dirt. "I asked you point blank on the way to Utgard." Overwhelmed by her own thoughts, she found herself furious that Eren would pile more onto her. She rounded on him and said, "I told you I was bad at dying." "You can't say something that slanted and still claim it's the truth. You hid this from us." "I did, because I was taught that revealing the monster I am would end in losing everyone. I only told Levi about it after the Titan Forest. I hid it from him our whole lives." At this, Eren's entire expression changed, and he paused with his hand on the doorframe. "Why wouldn't you tell the captain? I thought he was the most important person in your life." "Yeah, that's why." His mouth opened, but the words were delayed. "I don't get it." Himmel turned away from him and poured herself a cup of tea. She was filled with fury, but she still had the presence of mind to know that it shouldn't be brandished at him. "Levi gets it. Go ask him. Listen, I'm sorry that I didn't tell you or the others. For the record, when I learned that you could turn into a Titan, I thought that if anyone could understand what this is like, it would be you. But I was still too scared to share it with you, and I'm keeping other secrets about myself as well. One day I'll probably be forced to share them, too, since every last fucking thing about me keeps coming out of the dark since I came upside. But for now, I need privacy in certain areas." Eventually, it would come out that she was a Sabakia. Jean already knew, and so did Levi, Hanji, and Ervin. Now that she was actively using her connections to aid the Survey Corps, the divide between Himmel's White, ruler of the Undercity, and Himmel's White, humble Survey Corps soldier, grew slimmer by the hour. Still, she was intent on keeping both identities separate. The Sabakia belonged in the Undercity, where dirty jobs had to be done using dirty means. "But you won't turn on us," Eden said. It was a statement, but not entirely. "My people used to be the citizens of the Undercity. Now it's all the people in the walls. My loyalty is absolute," she said, wishing that it wasn't true. Her life would be so much more carefree if she didn't feel each person in her life was tethered to her own. Eden moved aside so she could pass out of the kitchen and into the dining room where the discs were waiting to be finished, and after a few moments she heard him head back outside. Himmel sighed and buried her face in her arms on the table. Everyone dragged themselves inside not long after sunset, bruised and overall worse for wear. Levi alone had emerged unscathed, and the sharp crease in his brow showed his deep disappointment in them. One by one they got cleaned and began making dinner, and Himmel stayed in the dining room, putting the finishing touches on both of the cipher disks. She was etching the letters and numbers onto the last one when Levi came in with a candle. The room had grown gradually dimmer as the sun vanished, and he put the light beside her. "They're shit," he said. Her nose was just an inch above the disks as she painstakingly carved the numbers in fine print with the tip of her knife. As though her exhalations could cause the blade to go astray, she said quietly, "Yes, they're very soft." "None of them have what it takes." "I'd like to say it's a good thing that they didn't live the fucked up lives we did," she said, "but right now it's inconvenient." "I thought them seeing you die would make them take it seriously. They look up to you." "Should have kept me dead for a few hours or something, made them sweat." Levi was silent beside her, and she looked up to see him frowning deeply as he took her in. "That was flippant of me," she said. "Are you okay?" "Yeah. Tomorrow I need you out there working with them, too." "Sure." "Eden was asking me about you." She leaned down and went back to work. "I thought he would." "These kids are broken in all the wrong ways," he said, and he sounded tired. Himmel sighed in agreement. "Hopefully there'll be time to heal when this is over." "Life's never that kind to us, but maybe it will be to them." He picked up the finished cipher disk and examined it, spinning the smaller rings with numbers experimentally. "This the one you used with Nathaniel and the others?" "Yeah, the starting numbers are different, but it's the same concept." He put the disk back on the table, and she felt his hand rest on the back of her chair, knuckles brushing against her shoulder blades. "I don't think it was ever Ervin's intention for you to be stripped bare like this." She stilled, halfway through etching a 7 onto the disk. Certainly, Ervin had sought her out because she was a famed killer whose strength in the field he could count on. She didn't think he had had intentions to use her connections as a Sabakia for Survey Corps business. They both knew that it would further tarnish the image of the Survey Corps if discovered. No one could have anticipated the situation they were in now, and Ervin was doing exactly what Himmel would have done, using whatever was at his disposal to achieve success. She didn't begrudge him. However, the same couldn't necessarily be said for Levi. She looked up at him, wanting to see his reaction, and said, "But was it your intention to finally know all my secrets?" His chest expanded as he took in the air for a sigh, but held it in. "Deep down, probably, but at the time, I just wanted to have you with me again." "Himmel, can you look at this? I think that idiot Eden broke my arm." Before Himmel could ask Levi the all-important question, "Do you still want to be with me?" John came into the room, clutching his arm gingerly. Levi backed away from her and headed for the kitchen, giving them all hell and ordering them to get a broom to sweep up the dirt that had been tracked in. She had half a mind to break John's arm again, but concealed it as she gently probed his forearm. There was a good bruise forming, but that was it. "Are you trying to get out of training tomorrow? You're fine," she said. Jean frowned as he took back his arm, still holding it as though it were a tender twig. "Don't you think we can find some way to do this without hurting anyone?" She was so fucking tired. Icily, she said, "You know you're asking the wrong person." Then she went back to working on the cipher wheel, and after a few moments, he returned to the kitchen with the others to help prepare dinner. It was the standard fare of vegetable stew and bread with water. Himmel finished her food in under a minute and went to the kitchen to begin washing the dishes in an attempt to keep them from talking to her and asking more questions about how she could come back. It was their nature to be curious, and she had always presented herself as a rather open person, but she couldn't expect them to understand the complex feelings she had towards this curse. More than anything, she just wanted to curl up in a bed and sleep for a year, until all this mess was over. Levi appeared in the kitchen doorway. "Mel, get back in here. Historia's going to tell us what she knows about the Race family." Hurriedly, she dried her hands and followed him back to the dining room. Everyone sat at the long table, staring at Historia, who was at the head of the table, looking like a doll placed in a chair by a little girl who had left and grown up. Himmel took her original seat back between Historia and Levi, and Hanji handed her a piece of paper, pen, and ink. She would encode the intelligence using the cipher. It started out like most upsider childhoods, growing up sun-soaked on a farm, with a mother and grandparents and animals. Himmel found herself slightly jealous of the normality, until Historia said that her mother had never spoken a word to her. When she learned how to read and realized how mothers were supposed to treat their children, she had tried to hug her and gotten hit. Himmel's fingers trembled, and she forgot the cipher. Under the table, where no one else could see, Levi rested a reassuring hand on her knee and brought her back to the now. She continued writing as Historia spoke without pause or emotion, recording how her mother's throat was slit and her last words were a wish that her daughter had never been born, and how the Lord of the Lands and her father, Rod Race, had given Historia a false name and had her join the Survey Corps. Himmel had never realized that it was possible to feel so alone when surrounded by family. The room was so full of remorse and shock that it was suffocating, and Historia just sat there, letting her lungs fill with it so that she could vanish. Himmel took one of Historia's hands and squeezed it. She had promised Ymir that she would protect Historia in her place, but there was no guarding her from scars. "Come help me with the dishes," she said. She wanted to get Historia out of this stifling room, away from all those eyes that were shooting her with arrows of pity, and let her have her privacy. However, Historia didn't feel the same. She said, "If you think you can say something to make me feel better, you might as well say it in front of everyone." Himmel swallowed down her own fear. She had already revealed that she was a monster to them, so it meant that she could share this part of her life as well, even though she wanted those days to die and turn to dust. "I know what it's like to have a mother that wishes you'd never been born," she said. "My mother gave birth to me and had to bring herself back. Her husband saw and called us monsters and threw us out. She brought me to the Undercity and she..." She forced herself to take the memories into her fist and wield them. "She tied me down to a bed night and day, and people paid her to beat and cut and burn and kill me however they wanted. 3 clients a day, every day, for years. I knew she was the person who gave birth to me, because she reminded me how I had ruined her life. But I didn't know how mothers were supposed to be until I left that room. And when I did learn that they were supposed to love and hug and cherish their children, I thought there was a chasm inside me that could never be filled because only a parent could. Then I made friends, and I found people I loved and cherished and would die for, and now I don't feel as empty." "But you still feel empty?" Historia asked. "A little, but I think it gets better every year." Historia was silent, her expression stony. She felt like a stranger to Himmel, who had spent the last 3 years thinking she was made of sunshine. Himmel didn't know the right words to say to her anymore. Or maybe there simply were no words that could ease the truth. Levi spoke up on Himmel's other side. "Historia, thanks for sharing this information with us." She just nodded. Hanji was quick to stir the heavy air. "Right, let's get the dishes done and turn in. We need to be up before sunrise tomorrow. Himmel, teach us how to use the cipher." Chairs scratched against wood as everyone rose to their feet, and Himmel had Levi go sit beside Armin and Hanji, and she showed them the cipher and the letter she'd coded with it so they could understand how it worked. "Ideally," Himmel said, "you'll memorize the cipher wheel so we can burn it." "But there are thousands of permutations," Armin said, "and the enemy could learn them and work it out if they got one of these. I'm giving one to Ervin, but if he has any sense, he'll memorize it and burn it too." "I got it," Levi said. "Once you two cram it into your heads, get rid of it. Mel, head upstairs and get some rest. You haven't had proper sleep in a week, I can tell, and don't bother with moving your shit." "You're so bossy," she said, hiding the biggest wave of elation she'd felt this entire long day. "May I shower first?" He gave her a full scowl. You better. Change the water in the room, too. She rapped her knuckles on the table twice, and his expression soured further, which only amused her. He was ashamed of having come from the Undercity, and would never use their mannerisms, even the ones that were harmless, like this. Still smiling, she bent over to take her dagger out of her boot and cut off a single curl in the underlayer. Everyone looked at her in bewilderment, except for Levi. I wrote a letter for the Starks. This lock of hair needs to go in the envelope, she said. Why? Hanji said. It doesn't happen often, but sometimes people pretend to be me in letters. A signature can be imitated, but this hair can't. But couldn't someone keep that lock of hair and use it? Armin said. Someone tried that once, Levi said. Himmel finished, and no one's had the balls to try it again. How'd you manage to scare the whole Undercity into following the rule? Hanji asked. Perhaps Levi knew she was going to avoid the question because he said, she made a rope out of her own hair and hung the man from the tallest building in the Undercity. I was young and hot-headed, she said, face growing red as Hanji and Armin looked at her in horror. It could cause total chaos if there were people sending messages pretending to be Mel, Levi said. It was extreme, but it had to be done. She hadn't expected him to come to her defense, considering how upset he'd been with her these past few days. Maybe, in this one case, he was of the same mind as her. By making an example out of one person who had pretended to be her, she had saved the lives of those that could have been attacked or killed by false orders. Flustered, she ran a hand through her curls and muttered an excuse to leave. She was intensely proud of the support system she'd built for the citizens of the Undercity over the years, but she had had to do some very shameful things along the way, and the shame was doubled by her lack of regret. After going upstairs to grab a change of clothes and the basin and pitcher, she went down and showered and refilled both vessels. When she got back into the room was dark but for a single candle on the nightstand, and Levi was in a bed in a loose shirt and pants. Himmel put the basin and pitcher on the dresser, deposited her dirty clothes in a basket beside the dresser, and slipped out of her shoes as she took a knife out of her trousers and put it on the nightstand. Her swords she'd already rested against it when she'd come upstairs to get her pajamas, which were just a black undershirt and thin pants. "Are you sure?" she said quietly. "I could go sleep with one of the girls." Levi was lying on his side, head propped up on a palm as he took her in. The candlelight made his blank expression appear to be livelier than it actually was. In reply, he folded back the corner of the blanket. And that's the end of the chapter. Thank you for listening. I hope that you enjoyed it. Had a lot going on here with the fight and the big reveal of her secret to the team, as well as Historia explaining everything that happened with the Race family. I may accidentally say... I keep calling them Race because in Japanese it was Reisu rather than Rice. So I keep having these pronunciation issues, so I may flip-flop between the two while I'm reading. Don't worry about it too much. Yeah. So, fun side note. My pen name, Tolstoy Ackerman. So, I named myself this, not because I think I'm as good as Tolstoy. I've never even read his stuff. It's just because I was telling a friend that, oh, I wrote this AOT fic that's over 1,100 pages, and he was like, "Who are you, Tolstoy?" And I found it really hilarious, so I decided to make my pen name Tolstoy Ackerman while I'm writing this fic. So, yeah, that's the little etymology behind the name, I suppose. But alright, thanks for listening. Hope to catch you again in the next chapter. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.